Deuteronomy chapter 9 and 10.
Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today and go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the descendants of the Anakim, whom you know, and of whom you heard it said, who can stand before the descendants of Anak? Therefore, understand today that the Lord your God is he who goes over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and bring them down before you, so you shall drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said to you. Do not think in your heart, after the Lord your God has cast them out before you, saying, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God drives them out from before you, and that he may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Therefore, understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stiff-necked people. Remember, do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness, from the day that you departed from the land of Egypt until you came to this place. You have been rebellious against the Lord. Also in Horeb, you provoked the Lord to wrath, so that the Lord was angry enough with you to have destroyed you. When I went up into the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of covenant which the Lord made with you, then I stayed on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water. Then the Lord delivered to me 2 tablets of stone written with the finger of God, and on them were all the words which the Lord had spoken to you on the mountain from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days and 40 nights that the Lord gave me the 2 tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. And the Lord said to me, arise, go down quickly from here, for your people, whom you brought out of Egypt, have acted corruptly. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded image. Furthermore, the Lord spoke to me, saying, I have seen this people, and indeed they are a stiff-necked people. Let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I will make of you a nation mightier than and greater than they. So I turned and came down from the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire, and the 2 tablets of the covenant were in my 2 hands. And I looked, and behold, you had sinned against the Lord your God, and had made for yourselves a molded calf. You had turned aside quickly from the way which the Lord had commanded you. Then I took the 2 tablets, and threw them out of my 2 hands, and broke them before your eyes. And I fell down before the Lord as at the first. 40 days and 40 nights, I neither ate bread nor drank water because of all your sin, which you committed in doing wickedly in the sight of the Lord, to provoke him to anger. For I was afraid of the anger and hot displeasure with which the Lord was angry with you, to destroy you. But the Lord listened to me at that time also, and the Lord is very angry with Aaron and would have destroyed him. So I prayed for Aaron also at the same time. Then I took your sin, the calf which you had made, and burned it with fire, and crushed it, and ground it very small, until it was as fine as dust, and I threw its dust into the brook that descended from the mountain. Also at Tibrah, and Massah, and Kibroth Hattaavah, you provoked the Lord to wrath. Likewise, when the Lord sent to you from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up and possess the land which I have given you. And you rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God, and you did not believe him, nor obey his voice. You have been rebellious against the Lord from the day that I knew you. Thus I prostrated myself before the Lord. 40 days and 40 nights I kept prostrating myself, because the Lord had said he would destroy you. Therefore I prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord God, do not destroy your people and your inheritance, whom you have redeemed through your greatness, whom you have brought out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Do not look on the stubbornness of this people, or on their wickedness or their sin, lest the land from which you brought us should say, because the Lord was not able to bring them out to the land which he promised them, and because he hated them, he has brought them out to kill them in the wilderness. Yet they are your people, and your inheritance, whom you brought out by your mighty power and by your outstretched arm. Chapter 10. At that time the Lord said to me, Hew for yourself 2 tablets of stone, like the first, and come up to me on the mountain and make yourself an ark of wood. And I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke, and you shall put them in the ark. So I made an ark of acacia wood, hewed 2 tablets of stone, like the first, and went up the mountain, having the 2 tablets in my hand. And he wrote on the tablets according to the first writing, the 10 commandments, which the Lord had spoken to you in the mountain, from the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly, and the Lord gave them to me. Then I turned, and I came down from the mountain, and put the tablets in the ark which I had made, and there they are, just as the Lord commanded me. Now the children of Israel journeyed from the wells of Ben-Jaakan to Moserah, where Aaron died and where he was buried, and Eleazar his son ministered as priest in his stead. From there they journeyed to Gadjodah, and from Gadjodah to Joth-Bethah, a land of rivers of water. At that time the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, to stand before the Lord, to minister to him, and to bless in his name to this day. Therefore, Levi has no portion nor inheritance with his brethren. The Lord is his inheritance, just as the Lord your God promised him. As at the first time I stayed in the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, the Lord also heard me at that time, and the Lord chose not to destroy you. And the Lord said to me, Arise, begin your journey before the people, that they may go in and possess the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you, but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today, for your good. Indeed, heaven and the highest heavens belong to the Lord your God, also the earth with all that is in it. The Lord delighted only in your fathers to love them, and he chose their descendants after them, you above all peoples, as it is this day. Therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your hearts, and be stiff-necked no longer. The Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality nor takes a bribe. He administers justice for the fatherless and the widow. He loves the stranger, giving him food and clothing. Therefore, love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall fear the Lord your God. You shall serve him, and to him you shall hold fast and take oaths in his name. He is your praise, and he is your God, who has done for you these great and awesome things which your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt with 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as the stars of heaven in multitude.
Let's just start out with, what do you think, these 2 chapters? What stands out?
He starts it out by telling them that I am not bringing you into this land because you're better than these people. I'm bringing you into this land because these people are really bad. And then he goes through from there and proves to them all the reasons that they're really not that much better than these people. But he has made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he's going to fulfill it. And he tells them that as long as you keep these laws that I've given you, that you will live here a lot longer than the people that I'm throwing out.
Throwing out, yeah.
It's kind of funny. At first, they're his people, meaning God's. And then when God is angry with the people for turning and making this gap, he's telling Moses, your people that you've brought out of Egypt, he's already dispossessed them at that point.
Well, in a sense, they're both true. Because of the role that Moses was playing, yes.
I think it's interesting if any fathers today in this world were to tell their children that there wasn't any good in them and that they weren't any better than anybody else, they would be accused of verbal abuse and condemned by the system.
Yeah. Any more comments? Okay. Now, we know they're going into the land, right? Because that's the opening scene. And now he's going to bring back at least 4 incidences of the last 40 years that he wants to bring into memory to these, which he has done that before, and he's going to do it again. And it's very important. Now, Moses has an object behind this all. Technically speaking, it is God has an object behind this all. When you have been rescued from, delivered from, saved from, if you want to use that word, from a hard thing or a hard project or a hard action on your part or even the actions of another, sometimes in our world we have a tendency, because we are human, I'm not making excuse here, we seem to forget sometimes what has happened in the past to us. To give you an example, don't answer it. Do you know what happened in your life 5 years ago? Do you know what happened in your life 10 years ago? 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. Well, now, see, they're no different than we are. But it's written down there, and God wants them to remember certain things. In this particular area of Deuteronomy, there are 4 locations that he specifically brings out for them to remember. Not because he wants the rest of them to forget, but certain things happened there. He wants him to remember and don't forget it. Yes, God has mercy. Yes, God brought them to the promised land. Yes, God's going to enter the promised land. But before you go in there, I'm going to give you 4 examples, Aaron, Moses says, to show you. And actually, in the 10th chapter, there's even one more. And to remember these things and hammer into our minds our thoughts and our actions. And since we have been studying the Torah, going through the Torah, these things are not necessarily unknown to us. But same time, we have to say we need to be able to go back and think about it and read what it says, or at least have a memory of some of the incidents. These people actually lived it. So it's a little more impressive in their lives than it would be in anybody else's. And the very funny thing is that the verse 3 says something about him. Okay, now you're going to enter into this land, and yeah, they're bigger than you are, they're stronger than you are, they outnumber you, by a huge number. But he says, don't forget, I'm a consuming fire. Do you remember where else he said that? It was in the 4th chapter. The 4th chapter, verse 24. Let's go there for a minute if you can. 24, yeah. And he says, for Yahweh, thy Elohim, is a consuming fire, even a jealous Elohim. So he gave them warning in the 4th chapter that if you go after any other one, I'm going to come after you, house of Israel, or you as an individual. And so it's constantly there and very much present. Now, do they have a belief system that he really was a consuming fire? What examples have they had? The mountain is one of them, okay, but it didn't consume anything there that day. What was the first thing that God consumed? The what? He literally consumed the Egyptians. Literally burnt them up. We think of fire. Remember, he says a consuming fire, but it's not a fire like a match. His word destroyed the people of the firstborn of Egypt. And his word destroyed a tremendous amount of other things in Egypt. Remember that? So that's the very first thing. So they're very much aware of not a God that's, quote, their point in time in history, not a God that's full of compassion and love and mercy and understanding and forgiveness. They're aware of a very powerful, at this point in time, they're entering the promised land. They've come to know, that younger generation come to know, the very powerful, very mighty, because they saw plagues, they saw bad things, and Moses is going to remind them of at least four things in this chapter, to remind them how strong and mighty God is. In my world, if I could use my phrase, my thinking, in my world, when I think of God being mighty, I don't think of him being, oh, yes, he's greater than anybody else. No, I think of him being extremely powerful. And so powerful, he can be bring his, quote, anger toward me as an individual, which he is here in the book of Deuteronomy. He is warning the Israelites as they enter into this, because Moses is not going to go, right? So he's giving them a warning that God can become an angry God. So pay close attention to what he is doing and what he is thinking and what he is saying. All right. So now we come in here. This consuming fire. And he says, like she mentioned here earlier, that you don't think that you are the one, now that's 40 years, that you're righteous. And God's going to get rid of them to bring you in because you're righteous. Yes, Jeff.
Well, one thing, when you're talking about striking down with the word of the Lord, just was looking here in Revelation, and there are quite a few passages in here that talk about, for example, in chapter 1, in his right hand he held the seven stars, and from his mouth a sharp two-edged sword. Also there in chapter 2, chapter 19, as well.
Yeah.
So, same God.
Same guy, with power. Ultimate, incredible power. And, God has put within us, put this way, we don't respect somebody who is in a position of responsibility if they don't have strong inner strength. All right? I mean, how many, don't raise your hands, how many would like to have a very weak, feeble, bawling, sobbing president? No, you want one who's strong, who can answer and take tough, be tough, and do make major decisions that affects people's lives. That's what you want, not one as a pansy. We wouldn't want that. So in us, we have that thing because God created that in us, that we would do that toward him. Honor your father and your mother. Now, that's not just saying, oh, I honor you. No, you respect them because of what and who they are, and why they are your parents. They had jurisdiction over you. They led you, they taught you, they spanked you, they punished you, they did whatever they needed. They also blessed you, and also perhaps even cursed you. But nonetheless, they came out at the end. You say, okay, my mom and my dad, some of you live up to your standards of your parents because they had character and strength. Yes, Jeff.
Well, one reason why people like a strong leader or such is that there are lots of dangers in the world. If there were no dangers in the world, you would not need a strong leader to keep you from going into the danger or to at least alert you that there is danger out there. So because this world is full of muck and such, we need to be aware of it and help someone to keep us out of it.
Yeah, and sometimes I think, not speaking of any particular leader of the world, but sometimes certain nations have leaders that are just plain cowards. They don't have the strength, the fortitude, or the character to say, we will defend our people. They're ready to surrender their people because they're terrified and frightened of war. And here we have Moses saying, do not be that way. Do not be afraid of them, even though they are stronger than you. Now, it says here in verse 3, it says now that it says that Elohim, it says he shall drive them out. Well, in Hebrew, it means, well, like she mentioned there, they'll kick them out. He's going to give them an eviction notice. And put it in our simple language. You know, some of you know what eviction means. You're in a house, right? A law comes to law, and they evict you and take you physically from your house, right? And you have no place, no home, no nothing. Well, in a sense, that's what this means in Hebrew. He is going to kick them out. And if they don't go, he's going to bring forth something called destruction. Now, we know that a lot of Canaanites bled and fled the country. They didn't stay there. They're not quite that idiot to stay remain when the power of Elohim is there. Bill.
He didn't kick them out all at once here, did he?
Oh, no. It was once. Yeah. He evicted them a little bit at a time. In verse 5, to put back on what Tammy's talked about earlier, and it's interesting here, it says, latter part of verse 5, talking about his promise he did to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he says, and in some of the languages, and he may perform the word which Yahuwah spoke unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the word perform comes from a Hebrew word meaning that he may rise up and implement the word he said to. Now, in our world, sometimes we... How am I going to say this? Sometimes we think waiting upon God to do something. Okay, it's fine. I have no disagreement with it whatsoever. And sometimes God says, okay, rise up and you go do it. Right? Remember what God said to Moses on the burning bush? I came down to see, and I'm going to take my people out of Egypt. Moses, get them out. Me? No, I don't got to get them out. Moses, shut up, get them out. So Moses was the one that's leading them out. And lo and behold, now, remember, we've already read in, I think it's the book of Numbers, where God despises the land of Canaan because it's so filthy. And he said, I'll never enter that land, ever. It's too polluted, it's too corrupt, too filthy. So, you, Israelites, get in there and clean it up. Then I'll enter. Oh, why don't you God just kill everybody? Get it over with. Because that's not how God works. He wants us and people to fight. Not against somebody, but fight for him, for his reason, and for his purposes. If we fight for religious reasons, it's the wrong pattern. If we fight for convictions, it's the wrong pattern. If we fight for spiritual reasons, it's the wrong pattern. There's only one reason that God ever brought these people in, and that is not because they're spiritual, not because he wanted to make them spiritual, not because he wanted to make them religious. He wanted to make them his nation, his people, with strength and endurance and power, so they may be able to lead on. Verse 9. Talk about the two stones, or the tablets of stones. And it says, and he turns around, he says, even the tablets of the covenant. Yeah, covenant. So we look at the whole Ten Commandments. We'll get to that word later. Look at the Ten Commandments, and those are called the covenant. Remember he said, God did not make this with Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. He didn't make it with Joseph. He didn't make it with any of the sons of Jacob. He made it with them and them only. And so now we come into this thing. Okay, is or are the Ten Commandments, are they a covenant? That's what it says here, right? All right. So a covenant is a what? It's an agreement. It all sounds one-sided, though, doesn't it? Thou shalt, thou shalt, thou shalt, thou shalt, thou shalt. It's all one-sided. Nothing there with God. He didn't say, I will, if thou shalt, I will, if thou shalt, I will, if thou shalt, I will. No, no. Didn't say that. It's just covenant now with you. And that's what the agreement is all about. Now, let's continue on here for just a minute. We know that God spoke to them on the mountain, and it happened on the day of assembly, a very, very important time. Now, you remember what happened on the day of assembly? What occurred? The fire came down, okay. What else? The what? He spoke out loud, and he repeats himself here. You heard him say these things. And what did God say? A lot of stuff? Or just quote the Ten Commandments, end of quote. He did not add anything to it, remember? Moses said he added nothing. Apostle Paul comes back later and says he added nothing. Wait a minute. Did he add? What did he add? What did he take away? What was his agreement? Because here in this chapter here, it talks about one that he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, that's the different one. That's the one that he made with those three men. You remember what he said? He promised this, I will do this, I will do this, I will do this. With the house of Israel, he didn't say, I will do this, I will do this, I will do this. If you do that, if you do that, he done it. He just gives them the commandment. Okay, in order to fulfill or raise up Devarim, or raise up Debar, his word that he gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's what it says here in the ninth chapter. Did you see that? Now let's go on. And there's something very fascinating about burned with fire and verse 15. And it burned with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant, and the tablets of the covenant, which were in my hands. In the same word, it says to the tablets of the commitment or of the covenant, and uses the word burn. Now, when you kind of picture the best you can in your mind. When the fire came down upon the mountain, was it a big one or a small one? Large, massive. And when he came down and he spoke out of that fiery mountain, he said something. Right? The Ten Commandments. Now we come into now the book of Acts. It has a very unusual terminology. And talks about the Spirit of God coming down as fire. Okay? Come down as fire. That's fascinating. The two parallels. Do you see the parallel? Now when he came down the first time, it was power and thunder and huge sounds of trumpets, basically the shofars, and powerful, and everybody heard exact words necessary. Now, on Day of Atonement, I'm sorry, Day of Pentecost, when the apostles were there, what happened that day? Were the commandments embedded within them? Yeah. Instead of in their, now it's going to enter into their heart, not their mind. And the reason why, when you look at that day, you start looking at these people. There was, well, I think it was 3,000 or 5,000, somewhere in that number. And that one day, were baptized and received the Spirit because they understood the picture of what took place at Moses' time and now what takes place. They see a parallel. That the word is being fulfilled. Now it's going to be the commandments of God. The laws of God now are going to be written within their hearts and their desire. And took the life of one man to do that. Let's go on now to verse 22. There are three places that Moses is going to, in verse 22, three places that Moses calls out. The first place was what? Which means? I know this is a test, right? Okay, now I'm going to be acting like a smart aleck here, you know? No, I had to go back and look at it myself to remember what it said. I'll be honest with you. It means burning. Okay, when did that happen? Back in Exodus, Numbers, rather, the 11th chapter, and it says, now when the people complained, it displeased Yahuwah, and Yahuwah heard it. His anger was kindled, and the fire from Elohim burnt among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost part of the camp. Ooh. You mean God will actually, he's a consuming fire, right? He's actually going to eliminate some people with his fire? When God becomes a consuming fire, something happens. A great blessing? No, that's not what takes place. Power. Now remember when, now we think of fire, we think of, you know, a blaze and wood and coal and hot stuff, the flames. What happened, we'll get to that in a minute, with Aaron's two sons? Fire came out. Now, and consumed them, right? But they picked up the bodies and buried them. If they're ashes, what do you pick up the bodies for? So when God consumes, he doesn't have to consume with physical fire. He consumes with his word, his power. We know in the book of, I think it's in Revelations, where... could be also the prophets, excuse me for me, not remembering where it's at, where the skin, the body, and the stuff just falls off their body, and the skin's gone. Zechariah 14, okay. Life is gone. Then there's another one that says, the blood of the horse's bridle. That's pretty, you know, high. Now, the second place he tested them out, Moses is bringing out, is what? Masa. Which, I'm sorry, what? It means temptation. That's where you're tempted God. And he says, and all the congregation of Israel, this is in Exodus 17th chapter, all the congregation had journeyed from the wilderness of Sin. After they had journeyed, according to the commandment of Yahuwah, they pitched their tents in Rephaim, and there was no water there. What happened at Rephaim? I'm sorry, what? Rephaim. Right. Two men held up the hands of Moses. The word Rephaim means those who hold up. Or that which is held up. Not a negative thing. But what happened when they got there? They complained. What happened after that war? Well, lo and behold, the people did chide with Moses and said, God gave us, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said to them, why chide with me? Where are you? Well, you're tempted Yahuwah. All right. And the people thirsted for water. Remember what God said? That, I read it 2 weeks ago. So I deliberately made you hungry. I deliberately made you thirsty. I deliberately had you eat nothing but manna. So you barely stay alive. That's what he said. Oh, why? To test them out. Now, is God any different? He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. He's the same. He's going to test out. Your faith has to be tested. What does it mean to have faith? Believe. What? Trust. Trust Him. Trust His Word. Trust that He will carry out His Word. And those 40 years is, and He said, this is evidence that you can depend upon what I said, and I am going to carry it out. Even though you don't like it. You can trust me. I don't lie. I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm going to do, and it'll carry it out. Yes.
Moses was up on that mountain twice for 40 days with no food and no water. I bet he didn't take a sack lunch. He figured, he knew there was no food or water up there. He had to trust God.
Okay. Moses also said the sixth chapter, which the Messiah ever quoted. Remember? What did he say? Why did God give manna to the people of Israel? Jesus mentioned it on the temptation. What did he say? You will not live by bread alone. And this is what God said. I'm giving you manna so you will know you cannot live on bread alone. That bread didn't sustain them. That bread didn't sustain their clothes. That bread didn't give them life. The bread didn't. And what Jesus said, they all died. Right? So sometimes people think manna is a wonderful thing. But it was a really, almost 40 years of complete testing out. Just to prove, let them know, you can't live by this stuff. If you just ate nothing but manna, I didn't live by my word, you're dead. You can't survive. What? And they didn't defeat, didn't even get sore. Not just the soul, their feet didn't get sore. For 40 years, it's a long ways, isn't it? I just find that very fascinating. And the last place was called what? It's a long word. Karot Lahapa. What does it mean? Oh, I know you remember this as soon as I say it. That word means, okay, I'll give you the first word. First word is graves. This is in Numbers 11th chapter, verse 13. Graves of lust. What happened there? All right. There went forth a wind from Yahuwah and brought quail from the east and let them fall by the camp, that it was that as it were day's journey on this side, as though it was a day's journey on the other side at about the camp. What's a day's journey? It's a lot of quail, right? And it was the 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. They were just really covered, massive mount. And the people stood up all that day and all that night and the next day, and they gathered the quail. He that gathered least gathered 10. Omar, it's a lot. And they spread them on all, spread them all above for themselves all around the camp. And while the flesh was yet being eaten in their teeth, the wrath of Yahuwah kindled against them. And he killed them. And there was a great plague. You remember the very next site, the very next place they had to go to? It's a place of peace and harmony. And they had to bury an awful lot of people. It's what's called a grave. They had to bury an awful lot of people. Pretty bad, isn't it? So Moses now, in this particular verse, gives us three of them, right? So he wants to make sure they understand that when they enter into the promised land, do not forget what has happened in the 40 years of your life. And these are the three he so far mentioned. The next verse mentions the fourth one. Do you remember what it is? This is important for us to go back. You know? We could just read this article and say, yeah, okay. But it's there for God to show us, for God there, he's written it down for us to remember. And what did Apostle Paul say? It is written there for a reason. For our admonition, for our correction, for our understanding. You think we should learn something? See, the Torah is not a waste of time. It's the one thing that grants us understanding of who? Yeah, of Yahuwah, the creator of heaven and earth. And it says, he who knows me. That's the one he is after. How do you get to know the Lord? You better read what he says. Believe what he said is true. Accept what he says is true. Even though it's hard. It's not a pleasant sight many times. And as we go on in the book of Numbers, we will see, Deuteronomy, we'll see, it ends in a very pleasant and uphill battle. We're not there yet. Moses right now is talking about, oh, don't forget, you're going into that promised land. Whatever you do, don't be intimidated. Don't allow yourself. Don't be, let's use our terminology we modern today, don't be a bunch of chickens. Don't be a bunch of scaredy cats. Fight. You got a job to do. But your job, get in there, clean it up, because the Yahweh will not enter into it if it's not cleaned up. And of course, he will consume it as he goes along. He'll get rid of them for you, but he will drive them out. With you, he'll drive them out. The house of Israel, now, with you, I will drive them out. You will drive them out. Yes, I'm driving them out, but you're going to do the job. God delegates a lot, right? Now, in the next one, next verse, he says, likewise, and it gives a third, fourth one now, Yahweh sent forth from Kadesh Barnea. Now, that's really not what the word was in the very beginning, which really means holy field. That's all it means. That became a name of the area much later in history. What happened there? He says, saying, go up and possess the land that I have given you, that ye, then ye rebelled against the commandment of the Yahuwah your Elohim, and you believed not him, nor hearkened to what he had to say. Now you have to go back. It's actually in the book of Numbers, 13th chapter. And basically it's the wilderness of Paran. A city became built much later in history. And so we're looking back in time, they're trying to identify this is the area, but it used to be the wilderness of Paran. And Caleb. Oh, you remember who the guy was? Oh, what's he noted for? Still to the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are able to overcome it. However, the others brought a bad report in the land, and they were terrified and frightened. This is the last statement in this particular chapter where Moses gives the very last warning, right? Don't do it. Believe God and listen to him. In the very first of this chapter, what do you say? You're entering into where? Into a place where, yeah, it's a military place. They have armies. They have fortified places. They have weapons. They have army posts all over the place. And they're bigger than you. They're stronger than you. They're mightier than you. They're better soldiers than you. They fight better than you. Go anyway. Now you have to trust God. Do I believe you, God? I will consume them before you. But if you chicken out on me, you're on your own. Maybe that's what he said, but that's what I'm thinking. He probably meant to get up. Chapter 10. I got to get through chapter. Is it fascinating to go back and look at this chapter and realize some analyzing what Moses is trying to say, what actually God through Moses is trying to let us know and understand? Don't forget. You know, when we read the New Testament, and we go through the life of Jesus or Yahshua, and there are certain things that he says, I don't want you to forget. He went through a very horrible death. I don't want you to forget it. And in the Christian world, all due respect, they don't remember that, and they forget it. All they want to remember is the day of resurrection. And here, the Word of God says, remember, 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 remember. Remember is the creator of heaven and earth. And Yahshua so will testify. The creator of heaven and earth brought forth the death of his own son. That's pretty heavy, don't you think? It's kind of hard to accept that, but that's what Yahshua said. I have waited for this time. I have longed for this time. Very last Passover they had. Longed to have this with you. That was after he prayed three times. And the answer was no, no, no. Or God didn't hear, God didn't hear, God didn't hear. But indications in the book of Psalms, that it's like God wasn't hearing. Didn't pay attention. God was not responding. And the spirit was kind of removed, in a sense. Because he took on something when he did that. He took on the sins, the transgressions, and iniquities. And God cannot associate with somebody who does that. It's non-existence. Until that had to be killed, that had to be wiped out. That'd be destroyed. Now, 10th chapter. Once again, you talk about the midst of the death and the midst of the fire. Verse 4, about they call the Ten Commandments. Now, do you know what the word Ten Commandments really means? Devarim, right. Ha, Devarim. The Ten Devarim of God. This word is not the word of commandment like we've talked and taught you about what the word commandment in Hebrew means. This one is a different word. It means devarim. And you will live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. You'll live by every devarim that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And here, Moses is telling them, devarim spoke. Yahweh Devarim spoke. And so there it was, in the midst of the fire. In verse 12, very simple, right? That's also repeated. He said this in the 6th chapter of Deuteronomy, remember? Now what, Israel, does Yahuwah thy Elohim require? To fear to walk, to love, to serve with all of thy heart and all of thy soul. First thing it mentioned is what? Fear. The second thing it mentioned is what? Walk. The third thing it mentioned is what? Love. Another thing it mentioned is love is service. It's a lot of stuff there, right? It's kind of in an order. That's how you do it, all right? You fear him first. Then you walk in his ways. Then you love him. Then you got to serve. Did you ever notice that before? And so, how we got there? Fear, walk, love, serve. That's four things right there. Right there. Okay, now we have this verse 13. Now these are the commandments, not the Ten Commandments. This is a different word now. This is the one that we use of meaning the mitzvot. Mitzvot, and his statutes and his commandments that I commanded you. Verse 14. Here's where an interesting phrase in Hebrew comes up. Behold, the heavens and heaven of the heavens is Yahuwah's, thy Elohim. The earth also. Now in Hebrew, it says, Hashmayim Vush Mai Hashmayim. The heavens and heaven and the heavens. How many get there? There's three. There's three heavens. One is around this earth, right? Very interesting. We look up there. He says, built the tower up to heaven. Doesn't mean up to the third heaven or up out in outer space. It meant up to the skies. We call it today skyscrapers. New York is full of skyscrapers. And so is, a lot of cities do. Nations around the world have always built buildings up to the heaven, in the air high up where. Sometimes they've been so high you can't breathe up there, but well, some people can. Now, verse 17 is very fascinating. Here, I'm just going to read it in a simplicity of English. Yahuwah, your Elohim, is Elohim of Elohim. Lord of lords, a great Elohim, mighty, terrible, with regards to no person, takes no rewards. That's a pretty powerful statement right there, right? In Hebrew, it's Elohe of ye, he, Elohe of Elohim. That is, Eloheach means your Elohim. Eloheach. Who, for the word he, Elohe Elohim, which in Hebrew means he is the God above all gods. You mean there's more than one? In Hebrew, yeah. And basically in English, there are more than one gods too, right? We just lowercase it. Which is my respectful, we probably should. Gods of Egypt or the God of something else, but lowercase it. I don't have a problem with that one. But, and the last one is Ha'el Gadol. Ha'el Ha'Gadol. The El, the Great. The God, the Great. Basically, that's what it means. So we have a fascinating thing, and when we look at this thing that Moses is trying to get across, if I can use that, we see him reemphasizing over and over again who just who your God is. And this chapter is recorded your God or our God 8 times. So kind of lets us know. Now the very last verse I want to talk about. I know, I've heard it said many times, because in Genesis 26 chapter, verse 4, I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed they shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. All right. Now Moses says something here. Did you notice what he said? Verse 22. Thy fathers went down into Egypt. All right. With 70. And now thy Elohim has made thee as the stars of heaven. What do you think that means? Is it a figure of speech? Or is it literal? If it's literal, that means that the time of Moses here speaking to them who says you are less than the nations you're going into. You're smaller in numbers than the nation you're going into. Now he says you are like the stars of heaven. Does that mean the stars of heaven, not very many? The what? That's a good way to put it. Okay, any other comment?
It would have to be figurative, even if it was literal, because we can't count the stars of heaven, and we have no way of counting how many descendants there were. But just in that 400-year period, from Abraham all the way to that period, one would doubt if there were as many humans produced as there are stars in the sky. So it would apparently be figurative.
It has to be figuratively, right? Because the people in Canaan were outnumbered them. They outnumbered the stars of heaven. Uh-oh. Doesn't add up. Exodus 32, verse 13. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, thy servants, to whom thou swore by thy own self, and said unto them, I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven. And all this land which I have spoken of will I give unto thy seed, and they shall inherit it forever. Okay. Interesting phrase. Now, we're using English here. Now, in both Deuteronomy 10 and chapter 1 and chapter 10 and chapter 28, he says, you have numbered the stars of heaven. So Moses is saying the book of Deuteronomy 3 times. You've already reached that number. Now we have to ask ourselves the question. What does it mean? In Isaiah 13, chapter, verse 10. For the stars of heaven and the constellation thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened, and his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. I wonder what that means. The stars of heaven will not give their light. You are as the stars of heaven. Mark, 13th chapter, verse 25. And the stars of heaven shall fall, and the power that are in heaven shall be shaken. The stars of heaven will fall. cease to do something. And that Isaiah says they won't shine their light anymore. Oh, is that what is missing in the stars? The light is now out. Now, let me go to Revelations. chapter 6, verse 13. And the stars of heaven fell onto the earth, okay, even as a fig tree causes her untimely figs, that she is shaken by a mighty wind. Where does the wind come from? Revelation 12, verse 14. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and cast them down to earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which is ready to be delivered, to devour her children as soon as it was born. I have to ask myself some questions. Why in all these locations does it say stars of heaven? We figuratively say it means this, 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 all the way up until we get to Isaiah. Then it's literal. Then we come to, you know, even Nehemiah. This is a verses are the stars of heaven. Well, that's figuratively speaking again now. And Revelation is this, stars had to fall to the earth. Really? Which star would you like for it to fall and hit this earth? Which star out there? What's the closest star to us? Yeah. What's the next one? Bigger than that one. Would you like it to fall? So what is it saying to us? It's no longer going to give light to this world. It's no longer. Something's taken away. God has removed something from. He's going to cause something to be removed away from them. What is it? Now, at this particular point in time, I find it very fascinating that here it says, here in Revelations, that a third of the stars were no longer there. When did that happen? Before the birth of the man-child or after the birth of the man-child? So I'm going to give you something to think about it. I don't have an answer. But I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, I just point to the stars of heaven, and it looks like, I've heard people say, well, you know, and the sand of the seas, well, the book of Joshua said they are numbered to the sand of the sea. And we say, wait a minute, I've got a bucket of sand, I can't count them all. It's, figuratively speaking, making something different. So now we have to ask ourselves some questions. Why did Moses say this? And he says it three times in the book of Deuteronomy. You number as the heaven, the stars of heaven, for a multitude, or for unable to count them, basically, but both count to them. Because you can't count the heavens. You can't count the stars. No man can. But who can? Yeah. He says, you sons of Jacob, I know who you are. Do you know who you are? Some of us barely remember our grandparent. And some of us can't remember, what happened when I was 25 years ago? Moses bringing back information. Can't remember what happened 25 years ago in your life. Oh, maybe I got married. Would I get married? Oh, that wasn't it. You know, so you have to go back and think, what happened when you were at a certain age? What happened to your world? You know, when you graduated from high school? You might remember that. But, you know, that's faded memory now. Has no bearing. And even if you've done something you should not have done, and you had this wonderful worshiping of the word and cleansing of it, as Israel did, he says, don't forget where I called you from. Don't forget. Don't forget. And Moses, in the ninth chapter, speaks of four things. So I guess, in a sense, we should remember these four things in our life that we should remember that God did what he did, because what we did, he had to do something to correct us. This is just the four that he had to correct, but not the ones that, you know, that's pretty heavy, don't you think? I don't want to remember those things, right? Well, that's true. Don't want to remember those things. But at the same time, he says to the Israelites, don't forget.